this is David Douthat.
And this is Molly Douthat.
And welcome to More Than Hearing, a podcast to encourage preachers to incorporate multiple intelligences into sermons and worship leadership, because there are plenty of ways to reach someone's soul.
Today's podcast will cover the lectionary selections for Year C, Ordinary 14, also known as Proper 9 or Pentecost 7. In these selections, Paul finishes his letter to the Galatians, Jesus sends 70 disciples out to testify to the good news, and Naaman visits Elisha expecting one thing and finding quite another. Join us as we consider how to present these texts with some smarts.
We've established this podcast based on Dr. Howard Gardner's theory of multiple intelligences. Dr. Gardner suggests that there are multiple ways to learn, process, remember, and understand our world. Each week, we develop illustrations and special effects for the weekly readings of the Revised Common Lectionary that use various smarts based on Dr. Gardner's identified intelligences. We call them word smart, eye smart, math smart, body smart, music smart, nature smart, people smart, and self smart. You can learn more about Dr. Gardner's work by clicking on the link at the top of our webpage.
As we read and reflect on the scripture passages for each week, we explore ways these intelligences can be utilized for a deeper appreciation of God's Word. Anytime and any way we can make use of different smarts, we give people greater access to the Word of God so that they can acquire it, process it, and internalize it in ways that make sense to them. Let's get started. The Old Testament lesson for Year C, Ordinary 14, is from 2 Kings chapter 5, verses 1 through 14. Every commentary I looked at this just ran through the story again, so go look at a commentary and run through the story. Essentially, it's the healing of Naaman, a commander of the army of the king of Aram who had leprosy, and his expectation of how he would be healed. And the all the machinations that go into this. The lectionary ends the story right at the point where Naaman himself is cleansed of leprosy and his flesh is restored like the flesh of a young boy and he is clean again. David and I are going to do something a little different with the lectionary texts this week. We've decided that we're going to look for what we consider to be the primary expressed intelligence, the thing about the particular passage that we can glean from it and find expression most in one particular smart. David thinks that people smart is the primary expressed intelligence, and he will explain why. And I think self smart is a primary expressed intelligence, and we will talk about that now.
Okay.
So go for it. Why do you think people is the primary expressed intelligence in this story?
Well, there's so much interaction among people in the story. I mean, that's kind of a natural thing with this kind of narrative passage.
Lots of characters.
Lots of characters here. So the interactions, though, between you have the girl who was taken as a captive and ends up being a servant and her interactions, and then that propels Naaman to ask the king for leave to go, who sends word to the other king and says, and the king of Israel is like, how, what am I supposed to do? And then Elisha comes in and he's like, what's the big deal? Just, you know, so there's interaction between Elisha and the king. And then Naaman comes and he's trying to impress everybody with gifts and his power and his horses and his everything and not compensating at all for anything like like having leprosy. And Elisha doesn't even come out of the house.
Right.
And so
it's really a play, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean,
it's something that could be staged as a play.
Oh, definitely. And so all those dynamics are just very people-y, you know. So that's why I think
a lot of interpersonal
smarts and very different kinds of things. You've got helpful people and you've got powerful people and you've got powerless people and you have proud people and humble people and all kinds of people interacting. So
okay. Well, I see that. The reason I picked self-smart was because I'm kind of going with more the internal action that's going on there, particularly with Naaman and his expectations of what can happen or what should happen. And partly the internal expectation that he had of this is the way this usually works. And so when he shows up, particularly when he shows up at Elisha's house and expects Elisha himself to come out and nothing happens, Elisha sends out a servant who gives this very curt prescription of go bathe in the Jordan seven times. Bye.
Yeah.
And he's just left sitting there on his war horse going, that's it? Yeah, and so there's this process that goes on inside of him where he comes and he's expecting something, and then he's presented with something that was not even on the table or not even in the wheelhouse of what he was expecting. Mm-hmm. And he gets really angry about that, which, you know, you might expect.
Sure.
You come expecting one thing, you're told something that's completely ridiculous. What do you mean? And then his servants kind of save the day, and it's always the servants.
Well, yeah,
this whole story, all of the servants who are saving the day, who say, "Father, if the prophet had commanded you to do something difficult, would you not have done it?" Mm-hmm. Which kind of brings him down out of his rage, and he thinks, "Oh, well, okay."
Yeah.
And so there's kind of this process inside of Naaman where he goes from expecting one thing, being confronted with something that's ridiculous, being coaxed into considering that it's a possibility, and he goes and does it, and voila. So for me, it's kind of a self-smart thing, mm-hmm. where that's kind of an internal process that a lot of us have. We expect something, we're confronted with something, we're given some other information. Then I'll try on the journey. Yeah, exactly, okay. Exactly. So that's why I think this is self-smart is the primary expressed.
I want to just say something about our process here. In identifying these primary intelligences that we're seeing in the text, it gives us a way of thinking about, okay, what else could we use? Because if that's the primary one, then people who have that intelligence are going to pick that up intuitively.
Uh-huh.
So how can we in our preparations then look at the text from different intelligences to see what else there might be?
Right,
so,
which we have. We've got an illustration in math. And we've got a special effect in music, and we've already talked about people and self. So we have an illustration in math, which is interesting.
So the first is to figure out the worth of Naaman's gifts that he has brought.
Comparing it to contemporary.
Yeah, value. Trying to sort out what it means. He's got 10 talents of silver.
Oh, those talents.
Yes.
They show up all the time.
They do. So a talent is about 75 pounds or 1,200 ounces. In modern weight. Mm-hmm. And so you have that in silver and then 6,000 shekels, which works out to be 2 talents, actually.
Okay.
And so that's handy. So so 10 talents of silver and 2 talents of gold. So 750 pounds of silver, 150 pounds of gold. At the current exchange rates, that would be about $220,000 worth of silver and over $3 million worth of gold. And then 10 festal garments, which is a pretty extravagant gift, considering most people had like one
cloak,
one outfit for their life, you know, until that wore out. Mm-hmm. So to have 10 garments that you could change into on a day.
Jeez.
You know, would be...
Being a Kardashian.
Yeah. So, you know, an Armani suit might go for $4,000. An Armani gown or some other couture gown might go anywhere from $1,000 to $12,000.
Oh, I would imagine it's more along the ends of the high end of that, $12,000. Yeah. That's probably the low end of that.
Yeah, well, probably. Yeah. So, anyway, pretty extensive gift here.
Okay. Wow.
So there's a little, there's a little math. And the exact figures will be in the show notes for you. So the other thing about this is more of a logic item. And that is the argument that Naaman's servant makes to bring him down off the ledge, as it were. And it's a greater to lesser argument, or a fortiori.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. And this is apparently a pretty common structure in Jewish thought. Throughout the Jewish scriptures and in the rabbinic literature as well. And we've got a link to an article that discusses it. But basically, it's if A is true and B is a lesser subset of A, then B must also be true and more so.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the servant is using here. If you were required to do some great thing, you would have done it. So if you're asked to do a little thing, you ought to really, really do it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's an interesting way of comparing things.
Yeah.
And All right, for Music Smart, we don't necessarily have music per se, but there is an opportunity to use kind of a rhythmic sort of pattern. in this story, we suggest using the phrase, "I thought that for me, surely." It can be a refrain that you can use for a series of assumptions that people make about the kind of attention they deserve, both positive and negative. If you choose to use this, it's going to require some preparation. And so maybe you can have your congregation chant or even sing, "I thought that for me, surely." And then you can add something like, "I would be welcomed with open arms." Mm-hmm. "I would be recognized for the effort that I made." Mm-hmm. Positive examples. That's kind of using the rhythm and the patterns that is found in Music Smart. Mm-hmm. So just kind of play with that and see what happens. You can even set it to music. Wouldn't that be fun? And if you do, let us know, because we'd love to hear it.
Yeah.
Okay, so our illustrations then for people and self.
Okay, so for people smart, we often expect to be corrected by someone who is senior to us, either in age or experience or rank. But what's it like to have someone who ranks below you correct you, as Naaman's servant has done for him? Mm-hmm. And just that.
And for self, going along with that, take it internally. So think about a time when someone corrected your thinking about something that you're upset about and how it worked out, and if it worked out well. Did it change your larger worldview at all? How did that alter the way you live and move and have your being in this world?
All right, let's go on. The epistle lesson for Ordinary 14, year C, is Galatians 6, parenthetically 1 through 6, which of course we'll pick up for you, and 7 through 16. This is moving on toward the conclusion of Galatians. It's about the last argumentative part of it. Mm-hmm. But basically what he is saying is, he starts off in the 1 to 6 part talking about living in the Spirit and bear one another's burdens to fulfill the law of Christ, and that you have to test your own works and so on. And then he goes on that you will sow what you reap, and we're looking for a harvest from the Spirit, not from the flesh. And speaking of the flesh, there's these folks who want you to be circumcised, and they just want to get you circumcised so they can have the benefit of not being persecuted. And so it's all about them, and it's not really about you. But Paul goes on then to say that they're all wrong anyway. When I was looking at this, I thought the primary expressed intelligence here was math logic, because of the logical development. And Molly thinks that it's people smart. So you want to say something about your people smart?
Yeah. Well, I have to admit, it pretty much centers all on one verse, and it's the part that's the parenthetical to the lectionary. Bear one another's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. It seems to me that this is really kind of the crux of the entire thing of being a disciple of Jesus. And this is kind of the crux of Paul's argument too, is that you look out for one another, you bear one another's burdens. This is the way that you live into the law. But you do it in a way that's not compulsory or under obligation. You do it because the Spirit has changed you, altered you from inside, and it just flows out of you. You have no other option but to do it. I mean, it's just second nature to you now. And the reason that I chose that was because it made me think of some things that particularly that have happened in our world lately. And I'm just going to jump into people smart. Elizabeth Johnson, who is writing it at Working Preacher, says that too often those experiencing crises in their lives avoid the church for fear of judgment or for being smothered by condescending caregivers. She says a person or a family in crisis grows isolated, and the community of faith is not the place of healing and restoration that it's intended to be. This is kind of a distorted understanding of what it means to bear one another's burdens and fulfill the law of Christ. It sort of becomes more centered on self and one's own shame and one's own struggle of the crisis that you're going through. Whereas if you understand that you bear one another's burdens out of love, out of compassion, then the church is the go-to place to go to when you're having a crisis. Hmm. It's unfortunate that there is that sense that is an issue. Craig Koester, who wrote in an article in 1989, says that the three deaths have occurred in this particular passage. Christ died, the world died, and Paul died. So everything that would hold you back, everything that would keep you from fulfilling the being of a disciple of Jesus Christ is gone now. And you're going to get to that in your Math Smart. But anyway, some special effects about that. If you want to talk about this idea of fulfilling the law and of bearing one another's burdens, people who rush to help other people, aid workers who are going to southern West Virginia and to help flood victims, volunteers all over the world to go into harsh places to help people. You and David and I have participated in a service called RHINO, Rebuilding Hope in New Orleans, which is a ministry out of St. Charles Avenue Presbyterian Church in New Orleans that got into reestablishing homes and hope in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina came through. The people who lined up around the block to give blood in Orlando after the shootings. I mean, those are some illustrations of people bearing one another's burdens and fulfilling the law of Christ. So that's why I think people smart is the primary expressed intelligence. But you think it's
That's pretty compelling. maybe I'll just go with people too.
But I really like your idea of math logic because you had, go for it.
Okay. So I felt like I was looking mostly at the second half of the passage, the non-parenthetical part, and the development of Paul's argument here. And so the logic side more than the math side of this. He's looking at the motivations, basically, of the circumcision party, and that they are, like I mentioned before, that they're in it for themselves. They're trying to get a notch in their belt. And so he says they think that the circumcision is the thing. But then in verse 15, he says, "For neither circumcision nor uncircumcision is anything, but a new creation is everything." Mm-hmm. So in Western logic, and particularly Aristotelian logic, as I've been led to understand, not that I'm a specialist in this, but Western logic tends to think of things as a zero-sum sort of equation, that one of us is right and the other one is wrong, and that's the only option. Jewish thought, going back to the same article that we referred to in the previous section, Jewish thought seems to do a better job at balancing oppositional statements, so there's more of a both and kind of thing here. But what Paul seems to be doing here is stepping back from both of those arguments. and it's not that circumcision is right or wrong, or that it's okay to be circumcised and it's okay not to be circumcised. Paul's saying, why are you even still talking about this? Because it's about a new creation. It has nothing to do with any of that. So he's just going entirely outside the box.
Well, he's not even in the same dimension as that argument
anymore. Right, yeah.
So A is one dimension, B is the other dimension, and sometimes when you go with the third way, it's a C dimension, you know, the third way.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, Paul is saying, why are you even in that dimension anymore? I'm talking about an entirely different thing.
Right.
Which is what Costa was saying about Christ died, the world died, Paul died. So it's just something is entirely new, entirely different now.
Right, right. So if you were going to do a special effect on the logic of this, you could project or write on a newsprint, depending on your level of technology, that kind of development, that you have some sort of proposition and then you have two sides arguing A and B, and I say A and you say B, and the possible answers are that A is true and B is false.
Which is the zero-sum game.
Zero-sum game. A is false, B is true.
Still zero-sum game.
A and B are both true, which is the balance of oppositions. And Paul says, new creation.
Yeah, just scribble it all off.
Yeah, it's like, we're not even there anymore.
Okay.
Okay.
So do we even have anything else? Yes, we do. Okay.
We do. We also have some word smart and body smart.
You do word.
Okay. So word smart, what Paul is suggesting is that the circumcision party is looking for a notch in their belt, which is an idiom that we use. And I tried to figure out where that came from or what that meant. And there's really nothing on the internets that I could find that came up with a satisfactory description of where that comes from. One suggestion was that it was something gunslingers did.
Yeah.
They put a notch in their gun belt when they killed somebody. So
I'm guessing it's something warrior-like.
It seems to be something warrior-like that marks a kill or a victory, but it has come to mean something that you do that is likely to give you some advantage in the future.
Yeah.
So, which is a little broader meaning.
Yeah.
Similarly, a feather in your cap.
Yeah, where the heck does that come from?
Well,
I've always thought of birds flying over and going, "Pwah!"
Yeah, well,
hopefully it's a feather.
It may be from hunting.
Sure. So like the headdresses.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So either Native American headdress or actually several other ancient cultures would do similar things. And hunters would also, and even Northern Europeans would, if they shot a game bird, they would take a feather and put it in the band of their hat. And so that's what you use.
Feather in your cap.
A feather in your cap. But that also means
some status.
Status and something that will get you some advantage in the future. Okay. And that's what Paul suggests is going on with the circumcision party, that they just want you
as a feather in their cap, as a mark of their progress and their status.
I've done this. I've gotten some converts, you know.
Okay. And,
or as protection against the persecution for the cross of Christ, as he says. So, see, I got people to be circumcised. Don't persecute me because I believe in Jesus.
Okay. You know, I never actually considered the motivation of those folks. I figured they were just troublemakers.
Well, this, according to what Paul says, now, you
they've
know,
got that's their that motivation.
That's what they're after is.
Well, that's his understanding of their motivation.
Yeah.
It could be they are just troublemakers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, interesting. Fascinating. Well, and for Body Smart, we have an illustration and a special effect. Circumcision was an identifying mark for God's people. It was a way of bearing in their body the fact that they were identified as gods, which works for about half the population. but you might want to ask the question, what other ways did or has God marked us as God's own? And we've got baptism, anointing. Some people adopt particular hairstyles or clothing choices as identifying themselves as being apart, set apart by God or for God as God's people. And a special effect, this one might be kind of interesting. Tattoos are forbidden in Leviticus, but there's been a serious relaxing of those strictures in our culture, particularly. Today, a lot of people have them. So maybe what you might want to do is see if there's anyone in your congregation who has a tattoo and would be willing to share the story behind their ink. Why did they get this particular tattoo? Why did they get this particular design? And have them share the significance of that. And you know, the way we are all branded as gods, it's more of an internal branding, though, in this changing of the spirit of Christ died, the world died, we died.
Okay, let's go on.
The gospel passage for Year C Ordinary 14 comes from Luke chapter 10, verses 1 through 11, a little bit of a chunk out of that, and then continuing on 16 through 20. Jesus still has his face set toward Jerusalem as though he is a human compass. As this passage starts out, he takes 70 people and he sends them on ahead of him in pairs to every town and place where he himself intends to go.
It's a lot of places.
That is a lot of places. Yeah, you're going to be busy. Yeah. lots of travel. But I think it's interesting that he's kind of sending an advanced team to get things ready. Mm-hmm. So anyway, he's sending them on and he's giving them instruction how to do that, how to hit the road, what to take, what not to take mostly, how to behave when you get there. And essentially for me, this entire passage is a people smart illustration. Because in verse 16, we have the line, whoever listens to you listens to me, and whoever rejects you rejects me, and whoever rejects me rejects the one who sent me. And then at the end of the passage, the 70 return and tell them all they've done. And Jesus is like, yeah, great. That's wonderful. I'm glad you did that. But don't get excited about that. Rejoice instead the fact that your names are written in heaven. Mm-hmm. So David and I both think that the primary expressed intelligence in this passage is people smart, which we think is ironic because we couldn't come up with any particular illustrations or special effects for people smart except to just look at the passage itself.
Yeah.
So let's do that. I think it's all about hospitality, personally. And Jesus is saying, go out into this world as my emissaries and be as me when you come to these places. One of the most, I think, key things about that is the eat what's set in front of you passage, part of the passage, which when I read that, I think of it in terms of, you know, be gracious as to what people put in front of you because this is what they have.
Right.
Be a good guest.
Right.
There's some suggestion in some of the commentary that I've read that this is an interesting, almost a scandalous kind of encouragement on Jesus' part because he may be sending them into the homes of Gentiles who will put before them things they're not supposed to eat.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So Jesus is saying, go ahead and break the law. If that's what's necessary. I mean, he's kind of predating Paul here, saying, what is important is establishing the relationship, because I'm coming after this. Establish the relationship. You know, if you got to keep kosher in a quiet way. Mm-hmm. But if somebody puts before you something that you're not supposed to eat or something that you're not really sure you want to eat, suck it up.
I do have an illustration for that.
Yeah, actually. What?
I was attending a workshop one time, and it was the sort where you stay in people's homes at a church.
I know this story.
And the family had sulfur in their water.
It was a well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And they used sulfur as a softener.
Well, I don't know if they – I don't think they used sulfur intentionally. It was just in the water, and it didn't come out.
My uncle's water was like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. And
strong smell of egg.
Yeah. Awful. Awful. So showering in that, and then it came down for breakfast, and the smell was still kind of in my nostrils. And the gracious woman said, would you like to have something to drink, coffee, orange juice? And I was like, oh, yeah, orange juice, because the coffee would be made with the water. And so she gave me a glass of orange juice. And I was like, slurp. And it's like, concentrate. So. Yeah.
That you choked it down.
Choked it down.
You were a good guest.
I tried.
That's a very good illustration of what it is I think that Jesus is saying here.
Yeah.
This is the people smart aspect of this particular passage. I think it's just all through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a reason for it, because in establishing the relationships, we set a groundwork for Jesus to come afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to agree. I'm looking at the passage from the point of view of an introvert, and you know, traveling two by two is well okay.
As long as I get my downtime,
right? and then actually going into somebody else's home that you don't know. Wow, that's like off the scale.
Us extroverts are fine with that. Cool. Tell me your story. Pet your dog.
Yeah. anyway, a lot of interaction there of how that would go and what that would be like, from the modern point of view anyway. I mean, even if you're not a strong introvert in modern culture, that idea of going to stay in somebody's home that you don't know
especially standard ground laws, culture, that could be really dangerous.
Well, let's not go there, but so... That's kind of what I was thinking with people smart, is just that the tension and the anticipation of what might be between people and the peace or not peace.
So that's people smart. That's what the primary expressed intelligence we think in this passage. But we also have some things for eye and nature and math.
Right.
So let's look at those. For eye smart, for me, this is more kind of nature actually. But as I was reading this, when Jesus is saying the kingdom of God has come near, and that's one of the things you're supposed to say. If you're not received, you walk out of the village, you shake the dust off your feet, and you say, you know, the kingdom of God came near. Too bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
But what does this look like? And for me, as I was thinking about that, of people, pairs of people going to all these towns and villages, to me, it seemed like a viral infection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jesus sneezed and these people are going out, you know? And so the intent...
God bless you.
Indeed. But the difference is the intention, though. A virus intends to replicate itself by living in and sucking off of the host and using the host to do the reproductive work on its behalf.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the intention of a virus, is it doesn't really care about the host. It's just coming in to use it to make sure it gets reproduced and goes on.
Like the circumcision party.
Hey,
hey,
wow, there you go. But the intention of spreading the good news is to bring peace to the host cells, benefiting them if they're receptive to them and leaving them alone if they're not. The key there in this viral infection thing is the receptiveness. But the intention and that's an intention of a virus too. If a cell is receptive, the virus goes in.
Mm-hmm.
If a home is receptive to the good news, the good news enters, but the intention is way different in both of them.
Yeah.
So we also have a link to C.S. Lewis talking about Christianity being like the good infection. So go take a look at that if you haven't actually read that. That's really good too. And for a special effect, we have an illustration of the way a virus affects a cell. So if you go to this route, if you want to use this as a visual, there's a special effect for you.
Mm-hmm. For math logic, Jesus' instructions for the journey sound a little bit more like how some teenagers or college students might plan a trip. So this is, again, more about logic than about the math. But, you know, Bruce has a car, so we'll go with him. And we've got some Doritos and Slim Jims and Mountain Dew. And John's aunt lives somewhere in North Carolina, and
we'll
that's kind of on the way.
And so maybe,
yeah, I'm sure she'll
cool.
let us in.
So beach, here we come.
So it's, but it's not exactly pre-planning in the way that we would think of today, and it doesn't really suit the orderly mind.
No, at all. Yeah, I imagine people who were J personalities hearing these instructions to say, well, but what about, but what about?
Right. So for them, you can use the special effect of preparing a checklist for a trip where with all the appropriate subcategories, you know, clothes, toiletries, gadgets, financials, etc., house, you know.
Yes.
And I've got an app for that, you know. And you can read the list or print it, project it, or show it on your tablet, whatever works. And then prepare Jesus' checklist for comparison, which would have nothing on it.
Yes, exactly. Go. Yeah. That's the only thing on his list. Go.
And in fact, don't take ABC.
And then watch people shudder.
Right.
You might need to prepare some pastoral counseling after this if you choose that as a special effect. You know, talk to people after and say, it's okay. It's okay.
It's all right.
All right. For Nature Smart, here is a special effect you can try. Yeah. Based on verse 19. Get a box.
What's verse 19?
Oh, verse 19. See, I have given you authority to tread on snakes and scorpions and over all the power of the enemy, and nothing will hurt you. Wow, what a statement. Lots of trust has to happen with that. Power over snakes and scorpions, nothing's going to hurt you. So, special effect on this verse, get a box. You can like an Amazon box or something that's opaque. And then talk about how Jesus has given us authority over venomous creatures and the power of the enemy. And announce that you have a scorpion or a snake or both or pick your favorite, and that we're going to test our faith and authority. Of course, there's nothing in the box. But invite someone up and see how people react when you say, stick your hand in here. And if you really want to mess with their minds, as you're holding the box, scratch your fingernails on the bottom of it. So eventually you're going to reveal that there's nothing in the box. But this is the way to talk about the power of demons and the power of evil is nothing compared to what we have in Jesus. They're nothing except what we attribute to them. And if we give them power, they have power. But if we trust that Jesus has power over them and has eliminated that, it's nothing. Stick your hand in the box. Go ahead.
That's awesome. Well, that's it for today's podcast. Please ask questions or leave us a comment on our website, www.morethanhearing.org, or at facebook.com/morethanhearing, or send us a tweet at morethanhearing, or an email at connect@morethanhearing.org. If you try any of these suggestions, or maybe get an idea that you like even better than ours, please let us know what you did and how it went. We'd love to hear how using this theory has made a difference in your preaching and worship.
Be sure to look for our show notes, links, and resources on the website. We publish our worksheets on each text so you can see some of the ideas that don't make it into the podcast. That might be helpful or give you a spark of your own. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast using the iTunes, Android, or RSS links at the bottom of the show notes. Or point your podcatching software at morethanhearing.org/feed/podcast. You can also find us on the iTunes store. If you want to, you can subscribe there directly. And you can always support the show by writing a review, which will help others find us more easily. And of course, share the show with your friends and your colleagues. We'll be back with another installment next week. So in the meantime,
stay subscribed
and be smart.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
This is a Whippet Good production.